San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District this April 28th at 8:03. At this time, we'll look at the agenda, go to item number one, which is the Pledge of Allegiance. So can we get that going?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. Thank you, everyone. We'll go to item number two, which is roll call of the board of directors. And Christy Hawkins, can you call the roll, please?
Yes, President Chavez. Director Fellow.
Here.
Treasurer Trevino. Absent. Secretary Garcia.
Here.
Vice President Santana.
Here.
President Chavez.
Present.
Thank you.
So let the record show that four out of five directors are present for this morning's meeting. We'll go to item number three, which is the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
So moved.
Second, Santana.
It's been moved by Fellow, seconded by Director Santana. Any comments, deletions, add-ons? If not, then we'll take a roll call vote. And Christy, can you call the roll on that?
Fellow?
Here. Yes.
Garcia?
Hi.
Santana?
Yes.
Chavez?
You're worse than me.
And the correct vote is aye. Everything else. But I'll take that as a 4-0 vote. We'll go to public comments, item number four. Anyone wishing to address the board of directors this morning may do so at this time. And Christy, do we have anybody that's lined up there?
We received no written comments for the meeting today, and I see no hands raised at this time, President Chavez.
Great. If anybody else wants to chime in later on, I'll welcome that. We'll go to item number five, consent calendar, which is just one item. It's regarding the minutes of the board of directors meeting on April 14th. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved. Garcia.
Thank you.
Second, Santana.
Thank you. So it's been moved by Garcia, seconded by Santana, to approve the consent calendar as presented. Hearing no further discussions, please call the roll, Christy.
Fellow?
Aye.
Garcia?
Aye.
Santana?
Aye.
Chavez?
Aye. Thank you. We'll go to item number six, which is action or discussion items. 6A, we have a water quality update. That's led by Randy from the WQA. And Tom, do you want to introduce our distinguished guest?
Certainly. So over the past several months, we've had presentations on various entities and agencies that we interact with on a regular basis. Last year, we talked about Water Master and the San Gabriel River Water Master. Last month, we had some discussion about the Protective Association, the Water Association, the Distribution Committee. And today we've invited Randy Schollerman from the Water Quality Authority, who we are intimately involved with, have directors as a director and alternate on Randy's board. And the Water Quality Authority, Randy will get into it, been around for going on now 30 years and counting. So I thought it'd be good for the board, the staff and our producers to get an update and an overview of who the Water Quality Authority is, what they're all about, and what's going on. And Randy's got great plans for the future, I can tell. But with that, I'll turn it over to Randy.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning. Good morning, directors. Glad to be here with you this morning. And thank you for the opportunity to share about the Water Quality Authority And let me go ahead and get my screen shared here. Okay, we're all good with that, right? All right, so we're going to start. I'm going to give a little overview, a little history of the Water Quality Authority, first of all. Then we'll go into some of the cleanup activities through the different operable units. And then we're going to talk a little bit about funding and some of the activities that the Water Quality Authority is currently involved in as far as funding is concerned. So back in the 1970s, the groundwater contamination was first discovered in the main San Gabriel Basin. Shortly thereafter, the California Department of Public Health at the time initiated a well sampling program that would determine the extent of the contamination, a brand new thing here in the basin. And a lot of this may be, a lot of this course is well known to many, a couple on this board and others watching, but in 1984, the elevated levels of VOCs were in over 59 of the wells here in the basin. And then EPA came into the valley and added four areas onto their national priorities list, otherwise known as the Superfund list, and under the Superfund program. And so what that meant here in the valley was a lot of groups coming together. They had the regional board along with EPA and the Department of Toxic Substances Control all trying to figure out what was happening. And so then there were some articles in the newspapers in the mid-80s and lots of issues about what was going to be done with the contamination. And an 11-member Joint Powers Authority was created in 1990 to handle the, to address the contamination. There was a decision made that none of the other agencies in the basin had all the right things that they needed to do and handle the ongoing contamination, and no one knew exactly where that was going to come. However, in 1992, a bill was passed that created the San Gabriel Basin Water Quality Authority as a regular special district agency with the local, had the responsibility for the groundwater cleanup, and that were non-regulatory agency, as opposed to, say, EPA or the regional board or Department of Toxics. We plan and finance treatment projects. The main document that we have is the Groundwater Management and Remediation Plan, otherwise known as our 406 plan. And we're required to do that under our Enabling Act, and we currently update that every year. So we do a lot of coordination with the local, state, and federal agencies. So back then, it started as a 5-member board. However, today we're actually a 7-member board. A couple of members were added. As Tom indicated earlier, the upper district has a member. Director Chavez is on our board, and Director Garcia is an alternate to our board at the time, right now. We also have a member from Three Valleys Municipal Water District, the San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District, and there's a member from each of the, there's a city council member that represents cities with pumping rights and cities without pumping rights. In addition, there's two private water companies that are appointed to our board by the Water Association. Overall, the goals is laid out in our 406 plan to coordinate the groundwater cleanup, to inform the public, characterize the contamination. We assist the responsible parties, as well as the purveyors, and prevent any migration of the contamination. The goal is to remove the contamination quickly and efficiently, and to protect groundwater resources, and to fund WQA projects and other programs with outside funding. That is, some of those items on that list don't necessarily jive with how someone like EPA and other agency would do things. So that's why the local aspect was important. So moving on back to the early 90s, so we've discovered contamination and created the Water Quality Authority and other water entities in the basin and started having to put treatment systems on their wellheads. And in the early days, it was all volatile organic compounds. TCE, PCE. Here we have 1-2 DCA and 1-1 DCE. We're common, and you can treat those with air stripping or granular activated carbon. And later on, perchlorate was discovered, a different contaminant that required a different kind of treatment technology to move forward. And so a lot of those VOC systems had to be redesigned. Some sites had, we started to see the different technologies being required to handle treating the water and being able to deliver it to customers. So, and I give this as an example here. We have in the original, in the 90s, we had a regenerable resin ion exchange system. Now we've moved on to a single pass disposable system, which is much more economic. And that's typical of the way that the treatment systems have been going. You're always going back and you're looking for, you get a new technology and you go back and look at how can we make this more efficient and how can we reduce our costs. And that's an ongoing theme here in our basin. But yeah, we have some other contaminants that are showing up, that showed up, and 1,4-dioxane showed up in a lot of areas. So did nitrosodimethylamine, otherwise known as NDMA, and that required yet a different kind of treatment technology. And here it was ultraviolet light or advanced oxidation. Also had to be added to some of the treatment systems to take care of that. One of the things happened back in 1999 at the Lapointe Valley County Water District facility. It was the first perchlorate system to be put online in the States. Significant for that was a new policy by the, at the time, California Department of Public Health. Now you know them as a Division of Drinking Water. Put out a policy 97-005. It was new at the time, and our basin was the first ones to go through that process to get these. And that process allowed them to have these systems permitted so that the water can be used as drinking water for the purveyors. So even after that, one more contaminant came in and threw a little wrench in things for a time, 1,2,3-TCP. And the reason I explained this to you is because now we have PFAS, which is the latest chemical that everyone's focused on. It is a forever chemical, which is kind of a new class. It doesn't seem to go away. It certainly doesn't go away very easy. And it is on almost everything we touch, it seems. And so most are familiar by now that the firefighting foams and the nonstick cookwares contain PFAS. And there's an ongoing dialogue, and we've had it here in our basin, that what to do with it. The State Water Board has set levels and issued orders about sampling, the need to find out where PFAS exists. And here in our basin, Watermaster has been leading the way and sampling for those orders on behalf of the purveyors and figuring out where the PFAS is located. Here in our basin, because we have existing treatment and you can treat PFAS with, say, carbon and or ion exchange, some of the impacts have been minimized. On the other hand, there are some systems out there that don't have any treatment for anything, and yet they're being forced to now consider putting treatment on for just PFAS. So again, as you can see, over the couple of decades dealing with the contamination, there's changes, there's some new contaminants that come up. There's adjustments that need to be made. There's new technology that needs to be evaluated and added to so the purveyors can keep producing the water and serving the customers. And so here's a schedule or a chart showing that there's currently 32 treatment systems online. Over the past couple decades, you'll see that the amount has changed over time. And we're currently running about 32 systems. Total contaminants removed so far, about 180,000 pounds of contaminants and treated 1.73 million acre feet of water. One of the things that's significant here is, you know, these systems operating, we obviously have some very dedicated operators and water purveyors in our basin. that it requires a lot of skill to operate all these, all the so looking at the basin as an overall, here this is a typical map we would look at. A lot of people like to consider the contamination and by virtue of operable units. And so I'm going to break it down here for you by operable units, and we'll walk through them. But I would emphasize that the operable unit is an EPA term, and it just means an area of contamination that basically they assign a project manager to, and it requires some kind of cleanup activity. So there is a containment remedy that is put into place in those operable units, and there's a whole legal process that it goes through. So we're going to kind of walk through that, but I would emphasize that, you know, EPA's remedy, if you will, the EPA process and operable units, doesn't solve all of our problems here in the basin. There are many wells that need treatment and such that are fall outside of that whole system. So we'll start here with the Baldwin Park operable units, the largest operable unit within our basin. And the status is such that right now, there are 9 responsible parties, Aerojet being the largest, actually Aerojet Rocketdyne. The news here, I guess, is Aerojet's being bought out by Lockheed, so we're going to have yet another aerospace company in our basin. There are 5 facilities, large facilities operating here, and back in 2003 or 2002, there was an original 15-year agreement that was signed with the responsible parties. And this agreement involves many parties in this basin, not only the Water Quality Authority, but Water Master, who actually plays a lead role in administrating the contract with the, we call them cooperating respondents in the basin. So, and Cessna Engineers is the engineer for this as well. And so the first 15 years have been completed in 2017. A new contract was negotiated. A new agreement was negotiated for 10 years. It runs through 2027. Ongoing, many water purveyors involved also, being San Gabriel Valley Water Company, Valley County Water District, Cal Domestic Water Company, Suburban Water Systems, all play a role in this, in the work here. So moving closer in, we'll just take a look at this this area for the main plume, and you'll see that there's the treatment plants located in various areas. And let's see if we can go here. Where the water flow basically goes in this direction here. And you have a treatment plant located up in the northern area to kind of cut off the contamination up there. You have another set of treatment systems down in the lower area, provides another cutoff down here for the contamination. It's just a large plume, and it requires a lot of volume to take out all of that mass. And so that is how that system is designed, to give you kind of a feel how, why the treatment systems are where they're at, if you're not used to, if you're not familiar with this area. So then looking at the star right there, we're going to go and look at a B6 facility. That's the B6 treatment facility operated by the San Gabriel Valley Water Company. Here's an aerial shot that shows you can see the different treatment technologies there. This happens to be a 7,800 gallon a minute plant that has air strippers in it. To take out those VOCs. Across the street, there are vessels there that handle the perchlorate by disposable resin. Over in one of the buildings over there, they have the advanced oxidation that's taking out the 1,4-dioxane and the NDMA. The amazing, you can see that there's a lot involved in constructing a plant like that. This is the Valley County Water District treatment plant that has a similar treatment technologies. It has the air strippers. It has this one has the carbon, granular activated carbon. It also has the disposable resin. And so that's what some of these facilities look like. All right, moving on to the Pointe Valley operable unit. This operable unit here is got 2 different parties of it. One's very responsible for the shallow There's going to be a couple of different zones here. It's going to be a shallow zone. There's going to be a deeper zone, which is called the intermediate zone. You have Northrop Grumman, who has entered into an agreement to construct a treatment facility in the Remedy with EPA. They are in agreement with the Lapwinie Valley County Water District for the operation of that system. And suburban water systems will be taking the water there. United Technologies is the other responsible party. They're going to be primarily responsible for handling the shallow Remedy. And looking at this one a little bit closer, you can see a lot of the piping right there. You're looking at the pipelines that stretch out to some of the extraction locations around the plume of contamination there. And there'll be a central treatment plant down towards the south in this area here. And then so we'll look at the a shot of the shallow. This is actually just, you can see laid right on top of the contamination. This will be yet more pipelines and more wells to take care of the shallow area. And there's going to be a central treatment plant I mentioned before is right here. It's actually still under construction. This is a shot of it about a month or two ago. This is this right next to the sheriff's station, I believe, or city hall over in Lapwinie City Hall. So you can see this one is actually going to have a reverse osmosis technology in it to help make the water potable and acceptable to DDW for service to the customers. That should be finished later this year and online sometime late next year after they get their permit. Moving over to the South Almani operable unit, this is a, again, each of these operable units have different responsible parties and different situations. Here, there were roughly 70 smaller parties that were not, none of them were big enough, like an Aerojet or Northrop Grumman, to actually handle the Remedy that was required. So this was different. This was called an EPA fund lead, where the EPA came in and kind of managed what the Remedy had to be. And Water Quality Authority, along with Monterey Park, Golden State Water Company, San Gabriel Valley Water Company, actually entered into the lawsuits versus these smaller parties and reached settlements. And those settlements are helping pay for the operation of these plants today. Those a lot of the funding went to EPA because EPA was settling with it, but EPA takes that money from the settlement, turns around, and gives it back to us in the form of a cooperative agreement. So the money is coming back to that operable unit, helping pay just for those quote-unquote Remedy projects. And this is where I want to talk about. You can see here that we have several, column 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 treatment systems, if you will, but there's several. There's 3 other treatment systems on here that are not part of the quote-unquote EPA Remedy. And that is an example of how these require additional funding and additional help because the EPA Remedy will not necessarily take care of all that. In this operable unit, the Water Quality Authority also has a Proposition 1 grant agreement where we're in collaboration with the LA Regional Board to look at some 12 high priority sites that need further investigation to make sure that they're not still contributing to the groundwater contamination there. Up in the El Monte operable unit, this is the contamination here is characterized by having both shallow and intermediate, those two different layers I talked about before. There is hermetic seal that is responsible for constructing. Here is divided into an east and a west. And so you have hermetic seal taking care of the one side, and you have Gould Electronics taking care of the other side, which happens to be the eastern side. The city of Almani is utilizing water from one of the remedies. The Golden State Water Company actually is also participating, and one of their treatment facilities is being used to treat the deeper zone as well. And here, this is a shot of the deeper zone, and you have 3 wells there with the pipeline running back to a central treatment system. And that's where the Arden treatment system that is being The water there is treated and used by the city of Almani. And then we have a shallow system. So again, you can see here's a shallow system with the pipes, lines connecting all the extraction wells to take care of the different plumes of contamination as they exist. The Whittier Narrows is another EPA fund lead project. There are no responsible parties necessarily because it's pretty much thought that the contamination is pretty much coming down from the South Almani Operable Unit, which just lies north of Whittier Narrows, up gradient, if you will. And DTSC, Department of Toxic Substances Control, took over management of this operable unit in 2014. And that's significant because now the state has control. So we talked about EPA coming in and looking at setting up these operable units. Well, EPA and the state of California have an agreement where the state will take over control of this area after it's been operating for 10 years. And so that happened in 2014, where the Whittier Narrows operated for 10 years and DTSC came in and took it over. And the same thing is going to happen, by the way, in South Almani Operable Unit, where that was a fund lead. In a few years, that will have been operating for 10 years, and the state of California is going to be taking over that as well. All right, so the Whittier Narrows here is a set of pipelines and some extraction wells. There's currently extra work being done to expand this system a bit. The Department of Toxics has a Proposition 1 grant to help expand this. San Gabriel Valley Water Company is operating the remedy here, and the water is being sent to various locations. But right now it's undergoing, starting to get, finalizing the design for the upgrades that are required for the system to still maintain control of the plume. So finally, we'll look at Area 3 over in Alhambra. This is an EPA fund lead. There are no set PRPs at this point. Let me see a second. Yeah. EPA fund lead. It's EPA is still investigating, looking to no responsible parties yet, but they are someday, I know they have some that are thinking about naming, they just haven't done it yet. Let me go back in here, and you can see there's already existing treatment here by the city of Alhambra, put on treatment systems a long time ago, almost 20 years ago. More recently, the city of South Pasadena added treatment systems to their well systems up there. So let's talk a little about funding and how this needs to be funded. Right now, we estimate, kind of good news, bad news, you know, we estimate the total cost to clean up about $1.4, $1.5 billion. To date, $994 million has been spent on the cleanup. And we estimate the unfunded future costs of being $570 million. And so obviously those costs will change as the technology changes, as new contaminants are discovered. But right now we put these calculations together to give us something to work towards and informational. On how is that money, of that money that's been spent so far, 74% of it has come from responsible parties. And I think that's a good representation of how we've been able to get the responsible parties to step up to the table, and they have done so. We're also involved with the federal government. We think that they have a responsibility here. A lot of the responsible parties, after all, were doing some defense work in the basin, and that's primarily where the perchlorate comes from. Local resources required, that comes through all the individual water entities and assessments. Contributing to construct treatment systems, and then the state. So the state over the years has stepped up their involvement. Back in the early 90s, some of those early treatment systems, air strippers and whatnot, were constructed with a lot of state funds. And the state kind of went away for a while. And now I'd say they're back. And we'll get to that more of that in a moment. So turning back to the federal dollars that we're going after, back in the year 2000, we went to Congress and had the what's called the San Gabriel Basin Restoration Fund authorization established. At the time, Congressman David Dreyer was responsible for helping us significantly for that, getting that established. Part of it, $125 million, was authorized for the San Gabriel Basin. This, what's significant here is that this is not just limited to capital costs. This is also allowed to be used for what we call treatment remediation. That's kind of our term of art. It helps, instead of just calling it operation and maintenance, that's the, what we call it to help our Washington folks. Operating treatment system is just not, you know, we're cleaning up the basin, we're restoring it, we're the basin is an asset that we're trying to restore. So we're treating it, remediating it. We're not just running O&M here. That's the significance of that terminology. So we have $55 million remaining in the restoration fund. And so you may have heard that we've kind of run on this campaign for the past 5 months or so, beginning back in December when our board took the action of adopting a resolution in support of bringing limited earmarks back in Congress. And the reason for that is because those funds that I just described in the San Gabriel Basin Restoration Fund, back in 2009, they were all of a sudden under House and Senate rules designated as earmarks, right? So we could not get any funding because the rules were in place that prevented earmarks from being put forward on both houses and in both parties. So both Republicans and Democrats kind of went back and forth on the earmarks and forbid earmarks from being put forward. Well, no matter what we tried, it all came back to, well, you can't get any funding from the restoration fund because your name is the only one in that bill. And we're calling that an earmark. It doesn't matter that in 2000, we went through committee after committee, we had hearing after hearing, we went through all the right processes to get that funding put in there. So we were kind of locked into that box and it's hard to get out of it. So we decided to kind of make a little more noise and raise the awareness of earmarks coming back. And so it's been said before in the past, over the past years, there was always a little glimmer about, okay, we're going to return to earmarks when the next administration comes in. It would work both ways, and it never happened. However, finally this year, it seems to be happening. So the House came forward several months ago and said, yeah, we're going to do earmarks. And just this past week, in fact, on Monday, the formal announcement came from the Senate Appropriations Chair that they were going to allow earmarks as well. So what's required in these to get this funding, this is going to be for FY22. These projects all require broad community support. And it has to be a regional project of significance. We claim that the cleanup of the San Gabriel Basin is just that, and we have broad support. We've received numerous letters of support, and we really appreciate that, including the one here from Upper District. So thank you very much for supporting us in that effort. We appreciate Tom signing that letter for us. Those have been submitted with several of our applications to the different congressional representatives here in the Valley. And now we're just preparing one to go into Feinstein's office since the Senate has formally announced that they're going to go ahead and move ahead with earmarks. So we're working on that end. Turning back to some state funding here, Proposition 68, is you may have heard about this, passed by the voters in 2018. It provided $74 million for projects that reduce or prevent contamination in groundwater. And they're used as a source of drinking water. And I would just step back for a second and say that, you know, everything that's done here by the purveyors in the Valley and all this water is being used for drinking water. And I think that's highly significant since obviously now we're entering into drought conditions once again. And our basin is very important for that reason, and its reliability is very important. So it's important that these projects are also providing that source of drinking water. Water Quality Authority is able to receive, we applied for 21 projects under the guidelines. we were able to find that 21 of the treatment facilities in the basin qualified for funding under this Prop 68, and we were able to receive $35.3 million in awards for those treatment plants. This will actually cover, it's also significant because we were able to get them to cover, remember, that treatment remediation costs, right? Typically, bonds don't cover that. We were able to get that to happen over several years, that they're going to pay for treatment and remediation. And so right now with that funding, it covers about 4.5 years of the operation of this plant. The list looks like this. The cities receiving some of the funding for their treatment facilities are here: Alhambra, Arcadia, El Monte, Monterey Park, Monrovia, and South Pasadena. This is significant funding for them. Others receiving the grants are also Valley County Water District, San Gabriel Valley Water Company, and Golden State Water Company. So our work continues on the funding, both on state and on the federal level. Going back to federal real quick, time for questions here, but we're still even looking at, yes, we talked about earmarks and going for the federal funding for FY22, which is the next federal budget. There's also opportunities for the current budget. A lot of our funding comes through the Bureau of Reclamation. In the way that the Restoration Fund is set up, the funding does come through them. And we are meeting, for example, today with the acting commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation. Got a meeting this afternoon to talk about getting funding even from this current fiscal year. So that wraps up my presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Hi, yes. I do have a question, President Chavez, if I may.
Yes, please go.
Great. Thanks, Randy. That was a very great presentation. I really enjoyed that. I have a couple questions. One, who owns the operation plants?
Oh, yeah. So each of the water entities owns the treatment facilities
themselves. Each of the water entities.
Right. So let's say San Gabriel Valley Water Company, it's their wells, it's their treatment facility. They own all of the systems. So each of the water entities, they operate those systems, they own those systems.
And then, is there, you mentioned the cleanup. Is there a downward trend, you would say, in the contaminants and their presence in the basin over the years?
Yeah, that's obviously it takes a long time for that to show up, but there is evidence of the contaminants being contracting and cleanup happening, for lack of a better term. So there is the cleanup, the remedy in place is containing. So there's a couple different ways of looking at it. You have some containment where you're keeping that plume of contaminants from migrating to a different location, maybe impacting some different wells. Mm-hmm. When there's a remedy in place, it's effective when you can first stop that plume from moving any farther. And then you want to see that plume start to contract. And that's when you start that's a removal, or that's more of a restoration, right? So the ultimate goal here is that restoration and removing all those contaminants. That's going to take decades to happen. But we can see where we've already have control of the plumes happening. They're no longer migrating out of control, if you will. And so the plan moving forward is to remove as much mass as we can. Again, that's going to take decades, but we do see that happening.
Okay. And then one final question. For the PFAS, the new emerging chemical concern, I guess, is there going to be the same kind of process for getting the responsible parties to fund the removal, or what are the conversations, or what's the difference with this one?
Right. So the interesting aspect there is that that's not necessarily an EPA priority here in our basin, right? So they have yet to opine that they are going to be responsible. It kind of falls in a different category. And you'll hear, for example, the EPA administrator in Washington talk about he wants to send a bunch of money out for PFAS. But primarily the PFAS tends to be located in just certain areas, and there are certain responsible parties, if you will, maybe agencies. They happen to be located in areas of downstream from sanitation districts and things like that. And I think that the parties here in the base are going to be looking for certainly responsible parties, but they may not necessarily be the Aerojets of the world.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions that fellow directors have for Randy here? If not, I want to thank you, Randy, for your time and your effort as a member of the WQA. I've seen you in action. And can you share with us, how long have you been with the WQA?
About 26 years.
26 years of amazing, outstanding work, and we appreciate you. We're glad that you're our CEO there at the WQA. Your institutional knowledge has really helped the agency, and I know I probably could speak for all the seven board members that you're doing an excellent job, and please keep it up, and welcome anytime back to the Upper District.
Well, thank you, President Chavez. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And Tom, that wraps up that item.
Yeah, that concludes the presentation. Thank you, Randy. Very informative.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good. All right. With that, we'll go to item number 7, informational items, press releases and news articles are there at your leisure. We'll go to item number 8, our attorney's report, and Mr. Stephen O'Neill.
Thank you, Director Chavez. Just a couple items to recap what we've been working on. We finalized the resolution regarding the standby charge 4-21-618. We finalized an agreement with Elena for a fill station program. Work with my employment partner, Christine Hsu, and Evelyn on a employee benefits memorandum and analysis. Corresponded with staff concerning the status of AB 1195 and Assembly Bill 1434. In the past, I know we're not a party, but I've regularly reported on the San Diego County Water Authority lawsuit versus Metropolitan. As you may recall, beginning in 2010, San Diego has filed rate challenges to Metropolitan's rates essentially every 2 years after Metropolitan sets its biennial rates. The original cases are just about wrapped up, the 2010-2012 cases, with essentially a split decision in that Metropolitan prevailed on the state water project cost issue, which was worth a lot of money. However, San Diego prevailed on some other issues, most significantly the water stewardship rate element of the case, which I think as Tom and others have reported, Metropolitan is no longer, I think, levying the water stewardship rate as was previously done. But what's of significance is the later filed cases, the 2014 and 2016 cases, those are just getting started now. There's a lot of similar issues, but there is a significant difference from the earlier cases in that San Diego is claiming that it's entitled to some type of offsetting benefits that have not really been identified, but it could open up the door to a much larger damages claim by San Diego. That is just getting started. There's a case management conference coming up, and I plan to keep the board informed moving forward on that because it could have a significant impact on Metropolitan. So with that, I'll conclude my attorney's report and, of course, entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill. Any questions for our attorney at this time? Hearing none, then thank you for that. And we'll go to item number 9, engineer's report, and we'll go to Steve Johnson there.
Thank you, Mr. President, President Chavez. Good morning to the board, everybody in the staff, and everybody who's online. I'll make this brief. At the end of the month, there hasn't much changed since the last board meeting. I'll give you the key well as of April 23rd, a 195.1. As we've reported, the key well is dropping because we're putting no water in the basin, and we're certainly pumping water out. It's dry right now, as you all know. Rainfall so far through this season, rainfall is for both Putting Stone and for downtown LA is less than 40% of long-term average, about 35% in our basin, and about 39% downtown LA. So not good. And the result of that is certainly our runoff, which we use the runoff for groundwater replenishment, is very, very low. Storage up in the canyon, we're down to just about minimum pool right now, so there's not much water up in the canyon, nothing to release to spread. I think our rains are about over. We had a little bit of drizzle this week, but pretty much the rains are about over. Charles, Director Trevino is not on, but I will report on the water quality. In April, 41 wells were sampled under Title 22. In March, 21 were sampled. And then we received no notices of wells shut down due to water quality during since the last meeting. Lastly, and I see that we've moved Tony Zampiello, the executive officer for Water Master, onto the panelist. The general manager, Mr. Love, requested that we talk a little bit about operating safe yield. So I'm just going to do a little bit because I've done it before. I've done it like three times now. On the preliminary report on operating safe yield, I'd like to allow Tony an opportunity to speak up and get his thoughts, and then if anybody has any questions. And I'll just let the board know. I think at the last meeting, we talked a little bit about operating safe yield to make sure everybody, not only the folks on the board and the panelists and the audience, each year, Water Master sets the operating safe yield for the basin. And it's the amount of water that the water man, under the judgment, that is allowed to be pumped out of the basin without a replacement water assessment. Now, the upper district is the agency for the upper district service area. Upper district's the agency that provides the replacement water from MWD to be brought into the basin to replenish the basin for folks that pump water in excess of their allocated amount for that particular year. The operating safe yield is set at a set quantity. That quantity, over the last 7 years, has been set at 150,000 acre feet for the whole basin. That quantity is low, actually. Long-term average is closer to 200,000, and that reflects the drought. But that quantity is then used by the Water Master to allocate an amount to each producer in the basin, based upon their prescriptive pumping right that they got at the entry of the judgment, and their prescriptive pumping right is in a percentage of the total. So whatever the operating safe yield is ultimately set at, the Water Master takes that number, applies each producer's percentage of that, and then allocates them an amount of water that they can pump out of the basin without a replacement water assessment. So that's how it works. In April of each year, the engineer for the Water Master, which is us, and I give a report to the Water Master, which I've already done, which actually makes a preliminary recommendation for the operating safe yield. That's in April. It's then distributed to all the producers, responsible agencies, and everybody. That report is distributed, allows a month, 30 days for comments and input. And then in the May meeting, which is coming up first week of May, in the May meeting, the engineer, which I will provide, will provide a final report. In other words, comments that come in, conditions that change between the April meeting and the May meeting are incorporated into the report, and it's finalized, and then we'll prepare the report and make a final recommendation to the board at the May meeting. The final recommendation is just the engineer's recommendation in the report. The board actually will deliberate and make the decision on what the operating safe yield would be for the next year, okay? Currently, the preliminary recommendation is 150,000 acre feet, consistent with the last 7 years because the drought has not diminished. We're still addressing the drought on a lot of different mechanisms, but operating safe yield has been set at the same level while a lot of other work is being done on the water resource development assessment, where Water Master is actually assessing all of the pumpers in the basin, not just the overproducers, but assessing all of the pumpers in the basin, an amount to collect money to put water in the basin, to replenish the basin. And basically, I mean, what it really is, it's to supplement the lack of local water we're not getting out of our local runoff. And it's been going on now for, I'm going to say 14, 15 years. Some people say 8 or 9, but long term, over the last 13 to 15 years, the amount of local replenishment we've got into this basin compared to long term is about between 50 and 60% of long term average replenishment from local water into this basin. And long term average is up around 100,000 acre feet that we get from local runoff all the way into our basin. It's about 100,000 acre feet. So if we're getting 50 to 60% of that, we're looking at like 60,000 acre feet for average. And if you're looking at 60,000 acre feet when we normally get 100, 110, you're looking at 40 or 50,000 acre feet a year that we're shorting the basin, and it adds up. So that's the depletion we're having in the basin. That's what the resource development assessment is for, is to help supplement that. We're still doing the operating safe yield. It has been set over the years at 150,000. We are still assessing producers that produce more than they're pumping right, which they are. Our replacement water assessment and collecting money to replace overproduction too. So there's two mechanisms now being used to bring water into the basin. So that's what's going on. As I said, most important thing and point I want to make is that we will be making a final recommendation at the May meeting of Water Master. And the most important thing is that the engineer does not set the operating safe yield. The Water Master does. We just make the recommendation, and the board will deliberate and set that. And as you know, you've got this district has two members on that board that will participate in that discussion and set that operating safe yield. So that's what I was going to do as a kind of a quick briefing. Tony's on the line. I see he's a panelist. Tony, I welcome comments and thoughts you have.
Hello, Tony, are you there?
Yes, good morning. Thank you, President Chavez, the board. The only thing I guess that I can add before we start talking about any questions is that we did get this year in the, I guess to kind of put a finer point on what Steve said, you know, in past years where basin levels were higher, we had three or more rainy seasons in a row. In the judgment, the board has several things to look at when they set the safe yield. So they can look at availability of water from the imported agency. They can look at financial reasons. They can look at other things. And one of the things that I'm very proud of the producers in the last 5 or 6 years with the 150 is that they're actually managing really because of basin levels, and there isn't a big debate about additional costs, but as you all know, you struggle with your budgets and your rates, that when you have 50,000 acre feet that has to be purchased or brought in from the outside, that's a lot of money to the local community. So my hat's off to the producers for doing that. The Resource Development Act has helped greatly this year as far as what we're looking at. And our strategy under that contract that your agency approved and Three Valleys and Water Master entered into with Metropolitan to pre-deliver water is that we really did a great job. Metropolitan was concerned when they passed the contract that the groundwater basins may be viewed a little bit differently by other member agencies that aren't intimately involved, and they might think that we have a way of manipulating levels in the basin or other things. So the first 2 years of that contract, we made sure that we paid way above what the minimum payment was going to be. And what that did is that bought down the overall balance of, I think it was about 140,000 acre feet that we fully delivered. So the strategy going into this year, because things are so tight with, at least with the Northern California supplies, is for us to try and maximize at the end of the year with our cash available, purchasing as much imported water as we can to maintain those water levels rather than buying it out of the water already deposited. So we've got a minimum amount we're going to have to buy to meet the contract. And then we're going to coordinate with Tom and the producers and the other responsible agencies to try and get as much wet water in the basin this year as we can. And there may be an opportunity because the Resource Development Act is under the under the 5-year ramp up plan, goes from to $175 an acre foot, which before I believe it was $140 an acre foot. So that gives us a little more buying power. And so we'll be coordinating to try as best we can, given all the limitations on the system, to make those deliveries and try and maintain levels. Now, when you know, in your packet, you have the key well, you can look at those two lines on the key well graph and see that the lower line is where we would be had we not put these other programs in place. So we're going to be okay for this year. The folks that take water directly out of the canyon will struggle a bit because there's just, there aren't any flows really above those already negotiated last year for them to take. So, and there won't be really hard, very little, if any, natural spreading in the basin. So this is when we'll really lean on the imported water. Other than that, I'm here to answer any questions that you all have, and I appreciate you letting me be a part of the discussion.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Is there any questions from directors to our engineers or to Tony at this time? If not, I want to thank both of you gentlemen for your presentation, and we'll just go ahead and move on to the next item. We will go to item number 10, General Manager Report, Mr. Tom Love.
Yeah, you've got the written report in your package. A couple of things I want to point out coming up. Next week, we have our three committee meetings on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I'm going to start with a Water Policy Committee meeting, which is Wednesday, because part of that includes a presentation from Metropolitan. Keith Nobrega from Metropolitan Water District is going to do a presentation on the water supply update for Metropolitan Supply. So Colorado River, State Water Project, Metropolitan Storage Portfolio, and their projection for demands for the year. And that's very, very topical related to what Tony just discussed about the key well and basin production. With the low state water project allocation that we've heard about, there are some operational challenges that Metropolitan will have because it's a pretty small portion of their supply. While their whole storage portfolio is at record levels, frankly, they got more water in storage than they ever have in their history. A lot of that is on the Colorado River Aqueduct, and we prefer not to bring the Colorado River Aqueduct water into the basin for salinity concerns, and there's also some quagga mussel concerns. But anyway, at the Wednesday's Water Policy Committee, Keith will give us an update on the Metropolitan Supply. Stetson will also give us a presentation on the draft final Urban Water Management Plan that we'll be asking the board to adopt later this year before the end of June. We've got some good updates on the building, some nice photos of the interior with all the walls removed. So we'll provide that at the Water Policy and Facilities Management Committee. Monday, Government Affairs Committee, there's a couple of more legislative positions to consider. And Patty and her team has some nice and new, you know, innovative approaches with very topical, timely and topical subject matter on some education and outreach. And of course, the Admin and Finance Committee, it's budget time. So we'll give you that next Tuesday at 4 o'clock. and that's all I have to add to my report. Thank you, President Chavez.
Excellent. So do we have any questions for our general manager at this time? If not, then we'll go ahead and move to item number 11, which is director's comments. And we'll start off with Director Fellow.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday, the executive committee met at the Metropolitan Water District, and we did hear some good news from Jeff Keitlinger, who's reported that after 15 years of MWD pushing the Sacramento Regional Treatment Facility to remove nutrients and ammonia from the waters, they have accomplished that. They did some major renovations on the treatment plant, and he calls this a very significant milestone in Delta water quality. The board last week, it met every day last week, dealing with interviews for GM candidates. And we are moving forward with that, and I will give you any updates that I can right now. Most of it is closed session, which is kind of interesting because some of the people who talk in public session know more than I do, and I was in the meetings. So some directors are very aggravated right now. I do have to say, Glenn Peterson mentioned this week that he and I are, this is our seventh GM search. I've been involved in it, Met, and I've never seen a more fractured board. It is very sad. They're divided by divisions and regions and politics. And it is such a great organization and has done a lot of things like bring water to millions in Southern California. So I hope we can get through all this, but we have a lot of meetings planned in May, another few days of interviews coming up from what I believe, and I will keep you informed. I also want to mention that some of you went to the San Gabriel Valley Economic Partnership this week, and Blanca Rubio, Assemblywoman, spoke. It was very interesting, and Ed, you'd be interested to know that she has become head of the Moderate Democratic Caucus, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, yes.
and I don't know how many members, we're trying to figure out how many members we have, but I'm glad she's doing it because my party's got to get on the ball. And she also mentioned, which is good news, you know, the Rubios are fighters. Susan Rubio in the state Senate, they're doing, I guess it was appropriations or a bill going through that was going to give $12 million to almost all the Southern California conservancy groups in Santa Monica, for one, and nothing to the San Gabriel Valley Conservancy. And she fought for it. And first they said, we'll give you $1 million. Then they said, and she fought more. She said, they said, we'll give you $4 million. In the end, she did a good, great fight, and the San Gabriel Conservancy will also get $12 million. So that was a good fight on her behalf. But thank you very much, and I'll keep you noticed on what's going on at the Metropolitan GM search, which is a very exhausting search. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Director Garcia.
No comments.
Director Santana.
Thanks. Okay. Yeah. So I want to thank Director Fellow for your service on the Metropolitan Water Board, and also for your great summaries of what's going on, keeping us all informed and up to date. And so I also wanted to start giving a little bit more of a summary of the boards and the committees, I guess, that I'm involved in. So we did have a COG governing board meeting on April 15th. General topics were transportation, electric, natural gas utilities, energy conservation, housing and homelessness. We also had quite a lengthy discussion on the resolution to condemn racism, xenophobia, and intolerance against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and that did pass unanimously. At the Water Policy Committee on April 13th, we had a presentation from the LA County Sanitation District on the draft orders for sanitary sewer overflow prevention and enforcement. Recommended support for AB 818, which is regarding disposable wipes, and support for SB 230, which is Portantino's bill sponsored by Metropolitan Water District, regarding chemicals of emerging concern in water. We also discussed MS4 and NPDES permits, and then LA County Safe Clean Water Program, Measure W funding as well. And Tom, can questions on those if anybody has any questions. Regarding the San Gabriel Water Association meeting in April 26th, we approved financial reports, and we had agency reports from Watermaster, MWD and municipal water districts to discuss the drought conditions on the state water project in the Colorado River. And then we had our annual meeting for the San Gabriel Valley Protective Association on April 19th. Just general consent items, engineers reports put on by Steve Johnson. Thank you, Steve. Regarding basin conditions and annual San Gabriel River water master accounting, the LA County flood control report. And so we are having some emergency sediment removal from the Bobcat fires are in progress. The Cogswell Reservoir, as we are being kept abreast of, is below minimum pool. San Gabriel Reservoir is being lowered below minimum pool in advance of sediment removal behind those dams. And we had a report from the well measuring program conducted at by USC and election of the board of directors, and finally organizational meeting appointing the officers, executive committee, and distribution committee members. And that concludes my director's comments. Thank you.
Thank you. And then I have nothing to report today. And that concludes items number 11. We'll go to future items for number 12. Anything that needs to be on the agenda? Hearing none, then we'll go to item number 13. So no closed session today, Mr. O'Neill?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then with that, before I adjourn, Mr. Love, have we dispensed with all the items that we need to this morning?
We have, Mr. President.
With that, I want to thank staff, my colleagues, members of the audience, and anyone else who was online. And that concludes our meeting. I will adjourn it, and thank you very much.